Are you a fan of wrestling merch? Do you like to wear the latest WWE and UFC shirts? Well, if you're in Ireland, there's only one place to go for all of your wrestling and MMA needs. Wrestling Mania. That's right, Wrestling Mania, located on the top floor of St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre in the heart of Dublin's First City, is the only place you need to go. Wrestling Mania has everything you need, from t-shirts, hoodies, hats, wristbands, mugs, pendants, and everything in between. And if you're like me, a fan of wrestling history and memorabilia, then you never know what you may find. From action figures, huge back catalogs of books, magazines, DVDs, and all kinds of retro items. Shop for brands like WWE, Tap Out, UFC, Ring of Honor, AEW, and much, much more. And much more than that, Wrestling Mania is a family-run business and Ireland's oldest wrestling shop that has seen superstars such as Bret the Hitman Hart, Chris Jericho, Finn Balor, Becky Lynch, Dana White, and many, many more pass through its doors. So why not get down to Wrestling Mania today? You never, ever know what you may find. But get this, if you need a purchase coming up to the holiday season and can't make it to the store, don't worry, they've got you covered. Wrestling Mania will deliver directly to your doorstep. And if you can make it to the store today, Wrestling Mania will give you 20% off all purchases over 50 euro. That's right, for listening to Dynamo's Dozen, you get 20% off all purchases over 50 euro. What do I have to do, you say? Well, let me tell you something, Daddy. All you need to do is join the mailing list. Leave your name at dynamosdozen@gmail.com. Send me an email with your name. Hashtag wrestling store, hashtag dynamosdozen. That is it. And you get 20% off all purchases over 50 euro. For more information, once again, go to dynamosdozen@gmail.com to be on the mailing list, or go to Wrestling Mania Facebook page on the latest news and arrivals. Get down to Wrestling Mania today.
You're listening to Dynamo's Dozen. Now let's welcome your host, Ian Dynamo Kelly.
Welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, the podcast that I bring you each and every single week, where I talk about whatever may be on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, music, movies, muesli, fresh shocks and jocks, and everything in between, never forgetting the talk. And I welcome you all once again to your favorite podcast with me, your host, Ian the Dynamo Kelly. And I gotta say, guys and gals, some of your feedback over the last few weeks has been amazing. So I really gotta thank you for that. Because a lot of you have been signing up to the mailing list. And in doing so, you're giving yourselves a really, really good chance to win some competitions, which we will have coming up soon in association with our sponsor, Wrestling Mania, Ireland's one-stop shop for all your wrestling, MMA, and boxing merch needs. So all you got to do to sign up to our mailing list is email dynamosdozen@gmail.com with your name. You'll get access to the latest shows, news, promotions, and all of the offers that our sponsor, Wrestling Mania, has coming up to the holiday season. Literally, all you got to do is sign up to dynamosdozen@gmail.com. That's dynamosdozen@gmail.com. Just give your name. It's literally that simple. We're going to have more information later in the show on special promotions with our sponsors at Wrestling Mania that you guys will definitely not want to miss. So keep listening. But on to today's show, and the man that I'm going to be talking to today is a friend of the show, is a friend of mine, one of the greatest heavy metal vocalists of all time, one of the greatest vocalists of all time in general. He's been on the show 2 times before, once solo and once with the mighty guitar player Vinnie LaBella, that is himself, Mr. Kyle Thomas, lead singer of Exhorter. Done a show in Ireland there a couple of weeks ago. I was there. It was absolutely amazing. Exhorter are back with a bang, guys. If you've never heard of Exhorter before, and it is your first time listening to the show, please continue listening, because this is a great story. And keep listening to the music, because guess what? Before we even talk to Kyle, I'm going to give you guys and gals just a little taste of what this band can do. This is one of the most badass bands of all time. They are back with a bang. They have a new album called Mourn the Southern Skies, and this is the first single from that album. This is My Time.
We'll be right back.
So, welcome once again for the third time. You're becoming a part of the Dynamo's Dozen family now, my friend, Mr. Kyle Thomas. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you very much. How about yourself?
Dude, I'm doing as well as I can be. I know both of us are suffering from a little bit of a cold at the moment, but we're gonna get through this.
'Tis the season.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely caught the cold over this neck of the woods, because that sort of cold you do not catch over in Louisiana, I'm sure. I'm sure it's a different kind of ailment that you would get in Louisiana, but that kind of blocked up cold, that's definitely a European, mainly Irish thing.
Ah, right. Yeah, we usually just have like hepatitis from bad drinking water conditions.
Oh, dude. Listen, just before we came on there, we played My Time, which was the first single, I guess, released from the amazing new album, Mourn the Southern Skies. The single itself was released on the 12th of July, and the album came out on the 20th of September of this year, so just a little over a month ago. And then obviously you had The Hallowed Sound, which we will play a little bit later on in the show as well, which came out in August. So in terms of, let's go back, I guess, to, first of all, when those two songs came out, what was the feedback like? And then maybe later on we can kind of get into the recording process of it as well. But let's concentrate on the two singles, My Time and Hallowed Sound. You obviously released them just before the album itself came out. How was it for you? Were you nervous? Was it something that you felt that you had nothing to lose, or you had so much to gain?
I mean, to a degree, I wouldn't say we were nervous about it, but mostly I would say chomping at the bit, ready to have it heard. Yeah. Because for a good 6 months, we really just kind of had to keep it under the hat, and that was difficult because we were so excited about how it sounded. We wanted people to hear it. And the plan basically dictated otherwise. So we just kind of had to sit on it, maybe share it with a few people here and there that are trusted people in our circle. For the most part, the reaction has been positive. A lot of people really kind of suggesting that we exceeded their expectations. And you get a handful of people from time to time that dislike it because it's not like the old stuff. But you know, that's going to happen. You can't please everybody. Sure. But I am noticing the further we get away from it having been released and it's settling down, I'm noticing that there's fewer and fewer negative comments about it. And, mostly positives. We've gotten great reviews in the press, and the reviews that I've read online seem to be really strong as well. So I'm not worried about trying to please everybody. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And if anybody doesn't like it but still loves the band, the good news is the first two albums will always be there for you. So
that's absolutely, you know what, I got to tip my hat to you on that one. That's 100% true. I mean, I guess bands worldwide have obviously always suffered at, oh, I wish it was more like this album, because everybody has a certain preference, you know. Everybody has an album that stands out to them, no matter who the band. So that's a really good point, that like those first two albums are always going to be there. I mean, for me, on a personal level, even the last couple of weeks, and even before the gig, which we'll get onto later, I liked to go back and listen to each album individually. And then what I did was I actually shuffled all of the albums together. And it's still the same exorder sound, but yet more. It's a newer, modern kind of progression, I guess, to where you guys actually are in 2019 versus 1990 and 1992, you know?
Yeah, sonically, it's a growth, and that's what you want. You want your albums to sound better each go around. I shouldn't say nobody, because nobody surprises me, but few people will go into a recording process going, this thing, it sounds way too good. We've got to muddy it up and make it sound shittier. It's just very few people do that. I don't understand the, there is a phenomenon with people where they are shooting for that old demo sound that we had, I guess, in the 80s and 90s. And what they don't realize is, and that's not something we were going for. That was what we had to work with because of low budget and lack of technology. So
sure, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it may be something that is nostalgic for people and something that they latch on because they don't have any other measuring stick for how it's supposed to sound. But for the love of God, the Get Rude demo sounds the way it does because that's all we could afford.
And that's a good point because, I mean, the real way to judge a band, and I guess this goes on to something that you've always said throughout the years, is that to get the real kind of feel for what a band should sound like, it's the live environment, the gig environment. And, you know, hearing, obviously, having seen videos of your kind of European tours last year, some of the sets that you've done in Europe, and then obviously now touring the album, and hearing the songs live in person, but also watching the videos live, you know, which are available everywhere on social media. The new songs and the old songs don't sound out of place together. It's not like you hear Slaughter in the Vatican and then hear My Time and go, oh, that sounds like a different band there, because it's not about the recording quality, it's about the quality of the song. So that's a really good point, what you made, like, you know, technology's improved a lot, like, you know. So, is that a fair point?
I think so. You know, some people are pointing out that we've thrown more melody or hook into it these days, but really, as aggressive of a song as Homicide is, it's kind of the same format, just, you know, maybe without the production and the big choruses, but they're there. I mean, the structure's not much different. You've got strong pre-choruses, and you know, I think maybe what you don't have on Slaughter in the Vatican versus More in the Southern Skies is I was still very, very new to recording, so I hadn't really done a whole lot of experimenting. In fact, I was adverse originally to doing a lot of multi-tracking. I used it more as a nuance and an enhancement,
yes,
like a special effect.
Sure.
Whereas today I'll do, you know, double and triple tracking in parts, and then there's parts where I still do single tracking. It's, to me, it's contingent upon what the song calls for. So I'm thinking that if we had recorded some of those songs today versus back then, they would sound more more like they were born in this era versus back then. The parts and songs are kind of timeless.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, if thrash inspired metal punk can be exactly that, timeless, then, you know, I think if you took some of these songs and had recorded them at that time, they would sound like they were meant to be for Slaughter in the Vatican.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like I said, when I listened to, you know, because sometimes what I'll do is I'll just put like a shuffle of the three albums, and honest to God, the truth is, you know, bar the new album sounding like it's recorded in the modern era, in terms of the hooks, the music itself, not much has changed. You know what I mean? I don't mean not much has changed. Obviously, it's progressed, but what I'm saying is it's still X order, if that makes sense. Because, you know,
yeah, it's still the same formula.
Exactly. I mean, listen, dude, I've heard pretty much all of your music, so I can tell when Kyle Thomas is singing on X order versus, you know, Floodgate, Jones Lounge, Alabama Thunder Pussy. So it's, you know, you can have a singer be the you know, obviously the voice of the band, but technically Band in the Background still has that same formula, and I think the new album is 100% true to the Exhorter product, if you want to call it that even.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, it's but the album itself, dude, for me, 10 out of 10, it's my, and you know, I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass. Anyone that knows me knows that this is the case. It's my album of the year. It's my album of the last 2-3 fucking years. You know what I mean? It's an album that I've been eagerly awaiting for a long, long time. That I guess a lot of your fans maybe at one point never thought would happen. I mean, they thought maybe in 2017 it may happen or may not. But now that it's finally happened, I mean, for your fans, I guess, because I mean, this is a podcast that is worldwide. You know, most people that listen to Dynamos, doesn't believe it or not, are in the States anyway. So I mean, for your fans and for you, I guess speaking for yourself and on behalf of the band, what's been the feedback like from your hardcore fans that I guess that have stayed with you, and then obviously, you know, there's so many new fans that are coming on board now recently as well.
For the old schoolers, we're hearing a lot more positives, like I was saying. We just played the first home show since the release of the album this past weekend, and I've had some longtime friends and fans of the band that I would have not put money on that they would have loved the new stuff, and they are saying that they love it. They think it's our best stuff so far, which is that's pretty strong considering that, you know, we've some of these people have been with us since the beginning, and I'm sure that there's a handful of them as well that aren't as into it, but I tend to find that the people that aren't as into it would be music fans that are more genre specific. They don't tend to want to listen to anything other than extreme, and if it's not extreme, they have no interest in it. And as a music fan, before I'm even a musician, I don't understand only wanting to listen to one thing. It'd be like eating the same thing every day. Yeah. I couldn't do it. I don't care if it's the most exotic meal you could ever find or your favorite food. If I had it every day, I would probably want to go on a hunger strike. You know? Yeah. And the same with music. If I hear the same thing over ruthlessly, I don't want to hear it again for a while. There's plenty of albums that are like really important albums in my life that I don't care if I ever hear again because I listened to them so much in the past.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that people that are old school seem to be embracing it is really refreshing to me and a relief. And you know, for the newer fans, we've got a similar task. We've got to introduce them to the Get Rude era and the you know, the original Slaughter in the Vatican era. And we feel like we did that on this past tour. If you notice, when we played that show for you guys in Dublin,
yeah,
we only played 2 new songs off the album, and that was by design, partially because that was really the end of a tour that started at the beginning of September in the United States, and at the time the album wasn't even out yet, so the mindset was only play the singles.
Sure, yeah.
So, that said, we really didn't even have time to rehearse any other new songs. So, we just did what we've been doing the last couple of years. We played the set that we've been playing and just kind of eased in some newer material. And that way, most of these markets we've never even played before. I mean, I've been to London, but I think maybe one other guy in the band had ever played in London. And you know, the Exhorter never made it to the UK. So between the UK, Dublin, and a lot of these other towns we're playing, some of them have, most of them have been places we've never played before. So at that point, you're kind of doing these guys and gals a disservice if you show up in their town and you take it from the middle or where we're at right now. We feel like you might as well go back to elementary school and start at the beginning.
Yeah. And that's a really good kind of idea, because I guess it keeps it fresh for you guys as well, because obviously, you know, Mourn the Southern Skies has been pretty much your life for the past kind of, I guess, year or so. With promoting the album, with the single, and obviously starting off getting those songs out there in the United States. So I guess it was kind of fun to kind of add a couple of the new songs, but play the old songs as well to the set, I would imagine, anyway. I'd say it was pretty fun being able to be on stage and gauge and look at the reaction of the younger kids flipping like crazy motherfuckers to the old sound too, you know?
Sure, yeah, the experience of an Exhorta show is more than just listening to the songs. As we try to make it an engagement between stage and audience, a connection, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds kind of corny, but it's true.
No, it is true. I've seen it firsthand. I got kicked in the face at least 3 or 4 times with guys floating around the place.
Well, that's definitely a connection between stage and audience.
That one small kid in Dublin, I think, is the back heel of his foot caught me in the face at least 3 times. But when he was up in the air surfing, I was like, I'm gonna get that motherfucker and I'm gonna kill that motherfucker. And then he landed on his feet, and I was like, this guy's up to my belly button. I just gotta hug him. But it's a great energy, dude. You know what I mean? It's amazing to see. I mean, you know, you guys in New Orleans. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I've got a pretty good gauge on it from, you know, talking to you guys and some of the guys around that scene. It's a very old punk scene in the sense of our stage is your stage, and that's kind of something I got from that small intimate gig in Dublin. Is that something that you guys you're happy to do?
Those words that just came out of your mouth actually is something that we used to say to people back in 1986.
I wasn't there, I was too.
We used to tell people, our stage is your stage.
Really?
And yeah. And as soon as we said that, the stage dive and just went crazy. and now I noticed that today, even at the wildest of the shows, the pit is just a fraction of what it used to be when we were younger. And that's not a bad thing, I don't think.
Sure.
I think a large portion of the crowd is older, and the younger kids just really have never seen the intensity of the pits that we used to have. At least some of them may not have. I mean, I'm not trying to be arrogant enough to say that the pits that we had back in the day are something that people today have never seen at all. But I just don't think it's as much the norm as it used to be. Maybe that's just a sign of the times. Maybe it's just, like I said, maybe the audiences have just gotten older and no one wants to break a hip.
Well, yeah, for me, that was kind of my case. I was like, this is my first time seeing Exhorta. Now, if I was the same age as some of these young guys that were there, I'd have been doing the exact same thing. But now I'm a little bit older, so I wanted to see the band. But yeah, no, it's nice, though. It's nice as well that you still see the older guys kind of almost transitioning the younger guys into how to do it ethically as well. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, that's awesome. For you, one question I wanted to ask for you, was how did you find, because I remember the first time you were on this podcast, I remember we had a little bit of a joke because you had said that some of the lyrics that you used to write back in the day, you wouldn't want your kids hearing, yeah? But how did you find, actually, when you were writing for this record, lyrically, kind of what space did you find yourself in? Because, I mean, the lyrics are still amazing, man. Again, still very Exhorta, but maybe not to the extremity of some of the Exhorta songs of the 90s. Again, we go back to the point that you're, you're in a different time frame and a different time period in your life compared to what you were back then. But how did you find the writing process lyrically for this album?
Well, to address the first part of what you were saying in this, my kids have since grown since the last first interview that we had, and yes, they actually have gotten familiar with the lyrics, for better or for worse. There's something that's just deeply shameful when you watch your teenage daughter Google and read the lyrics to Anal Lust, and the expression on her face, and it's not an easy thing for me to have to see, but
I don't imagine.
At the same time, she's actually just recently seen the band for the first time, and she's actually she's not much of a metal fan, but she appreciates it in a different way than she ever did before, having seen it live and understanding, like, Dad is not just some guy who gets on stage and sings a couple of songs here and there. There's something magical that happens here.
Yeah.
So to address the rest of what you were asking about, a lot of it has to do with exactly that. Kids, you know, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a homeowner.
Yeah.
I've got bills to pay. So my worries and focus on things are a lot different than they were when I was a teenager. And in my young 20s.
Ripping flesh, you know?
Bother me. The things that scare me are much different than the things that bothered and scared me when I was a teenager. So, my time, for instance, as I say to the crowd, it's basically anyone who's ever had a job can understand and relate to that song. It's an homage to the daily grind that people go through and the toll that it takes on you physically and mentally. Asunder is a song about a true story where I want to be married more, so instead of the process of court and separation and having to pay alimony, child support, he just decided to kill his wife and kids. You know, it's a frightening spin on how this guy decided that was the solution to his problem.
It's real life.
And that's, you know, school shootings. That's any parent's terrified of that. There's so much that inspired me on the album, not just with things that I Googled and said, okay, that's a good topic, but things that I've lived and experienced myself. I don't see the world through the eyes of a 20-something-year-old man anymore, although I can appreciate it and remember it. Sure. Whereas when I was 20-something years old, I couldn't imagine what it was like to see the world through the eyes of a 49-year-old man.
Yeah, I got you. Even on some of the lyrics throughout the album, on certain songs, I could almost hear some elements of Katrina in it as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's very, you know, because obviously I know you guys, but I also know a couple of other guys that, you know, that are friends of yours, and I know from talking to you, you know, how, you know, the I guess the effects that you're still feeling today, even though we're talking fucking, you know, 10 years ago. So it's, that really comes true on some songs. It's, yeah. So it's, again...
Yeah, that had a profound effect on my life, and I don't know that there's an album I've written since 2005 where it didn't creep in somehow.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because we can only imagine here, you know what I mean? We can only imagine when you get some sort of tragedy like that that is affecting, you know, neighborhoods. I mean, I watched a documentary on Katrina again the other day, and some places are still just left to ruins, you know what I mean? It's almost Chernobyl-esque. So it's...
There's entire subdivisions that have never been rebuilt.
It's haunting, man. It's haunting. So, and that really comes true on some of your lyrics, so I commend you on that and how you really kind of brought that across throughout the album. So it was really good.
And it's free psychotherapy.
Yeah, exactly. That's it for you. It is free psychotherapy, and that's what I mean. You know, you answered that question beautifully in terms of how lyrics have changed, and I guess that's just a progression in terms of, and a transition, I guess, into, as you say, getting older. And good advice for, you know, a lot of younger bands that feel that they, you know, they have to still be angry to feel an emotion. An emotion doesn't mean that you have to be angry at the guy that wanted to pick a fight with you last week at the bar. It can be an emotion as to how you, how the world makes you feel, rather than being angry and pissed off at everybody. You know what I mean?
Right.
The establishment, if you will. It's still got that punk rock kind of thing as well, and that's what I like about it. So, you also re-recorded actually Ripping Flesh from Get Rude, which you mentioned earlier. I think it's like a little bonus thing on the album as well. My LP and T-shirt is on the way soon anyway, so I can't wait to. Although I'm gonna have that stored in a glass case, so I'm not gonna lie.
All right.
Yeah, I gotta have that stored in a glass case, dude. I don't own a record player anymore.
So what's that?
I don't own a record player anymore. I'm not gonna.
Oh.
That's gotta be displayed with my favorite stuff, you know.
All right.
And but in terms of, I guess we tr- so. I guess the last on the album itself, and kind of we'll have a bit of tour talk, but before we do get on to the talk of the tour and the, you know, the recording process of the album, we're gonna play the second tune that was released, which was Hallowed Sound, and all I can say, guys, is brace yourselves for this, because this one is about to rip your fucking ear holes. We'll be right back. So once again, I'm back with Kyle Thomas. That was The Hallowed Sound, the second tune released from the mighty Mourn the Southern Skies. Kyle, let's talk about those two tracks in particular. You've already explained My Time, actually, which is just the perfect return song for me. Even the video is awesome. What was the process, I guess, in picking those two tunes out of the whole album? Because, you know, if you take Ripping Flesh, the re-recording out of it, you've got 10 songs that are absolutely, you know, amazing. Obviously, the shortest one probably being, you know, My Time or Beware the Wolf. They're kind of the shorter songs, but they're still just under 4 minutes. Was it an easy decision to pick those two songs? Did you have them in mind, or what was the thought process there?
As far as My Time goes, it was the first song that was 100% completed. It was the first of the newer batch of songs that I wrote to, and it just almost kind of wrote itself. It just fell into place. Everything just kind of felt like it was magical, and it was in agreement. We were all in agreement, the band, the management company, and the record label, that, holy crap, this is the song that makes the statement that Exhorter is back.
Yeah.
It was fast and furious. It had a powerful metal sound with a punk attitude,
yeah,
and screamed a connection to the past, as well as a voice of a modern Exhorter. So that was a no-brainer. Yeah. As far as Hallowed Sound goes, we felt like My Time was probably the closest bridge to Slaughter in the Vatican, and Hallowed Sound was the closest bridge to The Law on the album. When people hear that song, they're like, man, this sounds like it could be right off of The Law. And I've had more than a handful of people tell me that about Hallowed Sound. So we felt like they were both strong songs with a lot of hooks and great pathways for old fans to move toward a newer Exhorter, as well as capturing a new audience. It was between those two songs, probably the most sensible selections, maybe even the safest selections for single release. I don't know. I really think Asunder is a strong song that deserves single consideration.
Yeah.
Even the strongest one for single consideration, but probably coming out of the gates may not have been as welcomed by some of the older fans. I don't know.
I guess I see what you mean, because there's elements of that kind of New Orleans kind of slower sound as well in Asunder. If you know what I mean, but if I'm on the wrong path, please correct me. But there was elements that I found of In Asunder that, yeah, don't get me wrong, that's probably one of my favorite songs on the album. But I think it's a bit of a slower song. The intro, the start is just unreal, but I think with My Time and Hallowed Sound, it's a little bit, as you say, a little bit faster. Asunder has kind of got real kind of, you know,
deeper in the groove.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, hey,
a lot of melody.
Yeah, it's got that groove. But listen, people forget that, you know, there was so much groove in Old Exhorter as well, that I don't, if they don't have the ear to hear it, then fine. But I mean, for me, I've always found groove in Exhorter's music. I mean, big shout out to Vinny LaBella here. You know, we're talking, I guess you're talking for Vinny in a lot of ways as well. I mean, the dude's guitar playing on this record is just, I mean, all the guys in the band, But I mean, Vinny really knocked it out of the park with some of the solos and some of the riffs on this album.
Yeah, without question. I mean, the riffs are Vinny's, except for Rumination is that was out of Jason Vibrooks's back catalog, and they sat down together and kind of exhorted it up. And that's really about all Vinny did for that song. He just kind of took the riffs and put a little bit of his spin on it to make it sound more like Exhorter instead of just a thrash song.
Okay.
But otherwise, you know, the riffs are Vinny's, and, you know, there's a lot of leads that both he and Marzi did, and overdubs that, you know, Marzi came in and helped with as well. So, everyone had their part in this album, and we're hoping that for future albums that, you know, we get more riffs. I mean, the door's open. It's open to me if I come up with a riff. I've only written one riff ever on an Exhort album, and even that got tweaked a little bit. But, that's just an open-door policy that if you bring a killer riff to the table, you know, it just makes the band stronger and better and more dynamic, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably the same policy for you with, you know, lyrically as well and melody wise, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. Let's get on to the tour itself. You've been touring now since September in the States, and then you came. So, how long the tour's gone from September until basically a week or two ago?
We did 21 shows. It was supposed to be 23 in the States, but two of them got canceled right at the last minute, right towards the end of the U.S. tour. Excuse me. So, yeah, we left the last day of August for rehearsals and didn't come home until the last day of September. Mm-hmm. And we were only home for 3 days before we were back overseas to do the European leg. So literally over a 5.5 week, 6 week period, we were home for 3 days in between. But we were running pretty hard.
Yeah.
At least for us. We haven't toured like that in a long time. So that was something that you kind of have to get your sea legs on for.
Yeah, sure. And in terms of, like, when, you know, doing it in the States is one thing, but then you obviously came over to Europe then in, was it the end of September or early October?
It was the second half of the first week of October.
Yeah. So you're doing a couple of dates in the UK. Big shout out to Fergal, H. Holmes, Dublin.
Yes.
Dublin Metal Promotion. Yeah, he done the gigs in the UK with you as well. I knew he was a big fan of you as well because the first time we had talked in kind of many years was actually after I'd done a podcast with you. Then I'd said I'd done a podcast with Phil, and he was like, "Man, I love Exhorter." I was like, "Oh shit, there's something we never knew about each other." So it was kind of great that he was able to kind of bring you guys over. But for Europe, for you, I know, was especially satisfying. And like you said in the last show, back in 2017 now at this point, or 18, was it? 2018, yeah. You would always wanted to come to what you consider, you know, the motherland. And you had a really great story, obviously, about, you know, your kind of ancestors and your grandfather, and coming to Ireland for you especially was gratifying, not just to play the show but also to come there. And anybody that hadn't seen the video, Kyle kissing the grass, the Irish grass, it's it's one of the great videos because you can see the boys in the band actually are really, really genuinely really happy for him. So I mean, it was great to see, you know, from my perspective for you. But how did that all feel?
That was of pure blood Irish descent, but my grandfather was, so the Irish in my blood is strong, and the Irish pride in my family was always strong. Although I don't know much about my family history or Irish traditions, I'm an American, you know. But the honor of taking the bloodline back for a homecoming was what was special, because it belonged to more than just me to do that. And my mother was extremely happy to see that. She always wanted to make it over here and was never able to.
Okay.
But she told me she was extremely happy to see me there. And, I like learning as much about it as I can. I wish I had been there for more than 24 hours, but there's always next year.
Yeah, so you can stay in my house. It's grand. You know what I mean? You can come anytime. You'd be fine.
Amen.
My boss would be more than happy to put you up, says she. So it was incredible. It was an incredible moment. But I mean, for you, you've done a couple of the shows in the UK, and then obviously here. How was the? Did you find actually any difference, I guess, in the shows that you done between here and the States? Purely because obviously in the States there would have been a lot of people that would probably have known of Exhorter a little bit more, or did you find that maybe the reception here in Europe might have been a bit higher because there was that expectation and probably a lot of fans, old school fans, like I say, but new school as well, that A, had been, I guess, wanting to see this gig for years, and then B, new kids that, you know, had heard of Exhorter and went, holy shit, I need to go there. You know?
There's a much different dynamic to a show where no one has seen the band before versus a band, an audience that that has seen the band before and knows what to expect. So a lot of times if the room's full and we've never played anywhere before and people are just standing there, we don't take offense to that at all, because people are just kind of soaking it in. It's their first experience. So what's the first thing you want to do when you see a train wreck? You want to sit still and watch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of the times I always tell the guys, if we're playing a big show and people aren't moving, but you see faces, that's a good thing. If you see asses and the backs of people's heads, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
That means they don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If they're watching,
yeah,
it's a victory. So that happens a lot. Now, granted, you know, that especially the show in London and the show in Dublin, we found that was probably the best reactions that we had, and in Turok as well at Essen, but we had played there before, so that wasn't the first time. But they just, the size of the crowds and the reaction we got were just what we were hoping for. Now, we played the other night in New Orleans and had upwards of 600 people there, but most of those people had either seen us before or knew what to expect. So the reaction we got from them was a lot different as well. But sometimes I've played shows in New Orleans where the crowd was rather boring. They've shown us more than once that they were used to it, so it wasn't like as special of an experience as for somebody who hadn't seen it in 20 years or has never seen it at all. So, but this time they definitely showed the appreciation, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we just got such a hot hand with this new album right now, and the excitement level is up.
Awesome. So you're saying that the best show was Dublin. Okay, let's move on.
I would say that Dublin, I told the guys when we left, I would say of all time, Dublin might be a top three.
Wow. Holy shit, man. Yeah. That's a pretty big statement, yeah. I mean, wow, that's yeah, pretty cool.
Just not only just the crowd reaction and the turnout, but the way things felt for us on stage, it was just, I could say it was nearly flawless.
It looked
from top to bottom.
It looked very organic, but it also, it felt kind of flawless from our point of view as well. You know, from the sound to the energy on stage to pretty much just the vibe and the experience, it was really crazy. Yeah, I would say it was, you know, because it was the first kind of metal gig that I've been to in a little while too. So you know, I should have kind of really known that I was gonna go there and get the odd kind of kick in the face, but it was. Yeah, it was worth every bruise, man. It really was. It was a hell of an experience. It was just great to say, you know, for me, and I speak on behalf of a lot of people that were at the gig as well, and probably on behalf of a lot of people at the London shows and the other European shows. I'm speaking on their behalf in the sense that it was just such an honor and a great privilege to be able to. To finally see Exhorter live and hear those songs live. And I mean, you joke sometimes about being older and old, and dude, the energy created from the band was just incredible as well. So you know, there wasn't a beat missed, in my opinion. That's just my 15 cents, you know.
Yeah, there's really no other way to do an Exhorter show than over the top like that. Otherwise, it's a watered down version. So,
yeah,
until we get to the point where our bodies aren't allowing us to do it at that level anymore, I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, dude, and I guess that's a great transition into the next question. I guess that I didn't even have written down. Not that I had any question written down. What about, you know, in terms of how well this has gone, do you think, you know, there's going to be another tour now in the summer? Obviously because the album is still relatively new. It's still kind of in its infancy in a lot of ways. And I'm sure, like, from a marketing perspective, you know, there's still, hopefully for you guys, a lot more records to be sold. You know, the website is there for anybody that is looking for, you know, for more information on Exhorter, for merch or whatever you may need, exhorter.com. You'll always find updates on exhorter.com for, you know, tours, media appearances, etc., etc. But also a great little shop there as well with some really cool new merchandise. And also, unlike a lot of American, not just bands, but American websites in general, excluding the import charges on buying, say, an album or an LP or a T-shirt, you guys have a European section on the website as well, which people can
correct.
Yeah, so people can buy the CD. I mean, at like a really cheap price, $14.99. They can buy the LP as well. You know, two sides LP, you know, €26. But if you really want some old school stuff here, and I'm looking at it, we got the Rip and Flesh T-shirt. If you want to get old school, like less than $25 for you Americans and euros for your Europeans. Got a really beautiful Yesterday's Bones T-shirt as well from Exhorter. We've got Slaughter in the Vatican hoodies. Beanies, the lot, guys, the law T-shirt, whatever you want. So if you're looking to buy your boyfriend, your girlfriend, yourself some nice merch, go to exhorter.com. if you just want to keep up to date with the band, I fully recommend going to exhorter.com. That was something I did for myself, Kyle. You didn't tell me to do that. I just thought I'd let people know where they can find more info about you and where they can
much appreciated. Christmas is right around the corner.
It is indeed, my friend, because already my lovely lady has got the LP on the way, she's got the CD on the way, and there's about 3 T-shirts on the way. And all without the import charges, guys. Like I said, if you're in Europe, there's no excuse. It's right there. You can buy it as the price that it's set. So there we go. But in terms of, obviously, like I say, the album is in its infancy. Are you happy with how it's going so far? You know, in every
yes.
medium. Yeah.
Yeah, I did actually inquire about a follow-up to, you know, of course, week one, everyone wants to know how it's doing, and we had some really good chart success in several countries. But I did ask my manager last week, because he was here for the show, I said, so, you know, how's everything going with the album? Are we still doing okay? And he said, absolutely. He said, it's, you know, it's not like there was this huge surge right at the release and then it goes away, which is not uncommon.
Yeah.
The album is still selling well. So we've got that to be excited about.
Well, that's awesome. And like, that's one of the kind of the reasons that I want to implore people to go and check out the album. If you like one or two of the songs, buy the album. Have the physical copy in your hand, man. It's one of the best things you know, especially if you're old school. I understand, and you understand, obviously, a lot of people now like digital format. But for me, there's still no better feeling than holding the physical product in your hand. There's something special about it. Getting a t-shirt, that's just something special about that as well. You know what I mean?
No, sure.
It's maybe I'm old too, so. But in terms of you know, you guys obviously now are back, and I mean, it's not just a little nostalgia act here. This is a new album. This is Exhorter back, and I'm sure down the road you guys wanna record again. But I guess before giving any secrets away or any plans away. What's next for Exhorter in terms of, is there going to be summer tours? Are we going to be looking at festivals or anything like that?
I just did meet with our manager. Vinny and I had dinner with our manager Sunday night and exchanged some emails in between then and now. And we've got a bit of a tentative game plan for next year going at the moment. We've got some shows planned for both sides of the pond, and also we're going to be getting back to writing so that by the time 2021 rolls around, we're not sitting there without having any kind of foundation for a follow-up album. So we're about to get back to work on writing as well as continuing to support this album. So that's the name of the game in this day and age. You got to work. The only way to work is to get out and grab the wagon train and get out there and sell the snake oil.
I love it. And, you know, that's music to my ears hearing that, because we'll see it again, thankfully. We can get more than three or four beers the next time as well, that's for sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Not that we were drinking. We weren't drinking.
No, we were just thirsty.
Yeah. Listen, Kyle, I know you're a busy man, but I also know that you've got a little bit of a cold like myself. Get yourself some ailment for that, and I really, really do appreciate you taking the time to come on again. Let's kind of leave the mic to you, because there is no better man to lead us out at the end of this show. In terms of, you know, what you want to say to some of your fans, especially your European fans, because we're over here on this side of the pond where it's been recorded, but also to your US fans. And also, yeah, something I spotted there the other day, something I want to bring to a lot of people's attention. Floodgate, I know, is a very special album to you, which is now available on Spotify. I was very lucky.
It is.
Yeah, I was very, very lucky to avail of some very rare stuff back in the day, Floodgate being one of them, Jones's Lounge being another one of them. But do you want to just say a couple of words on Floodgate and how people, you know, can find it and kind of what to expect?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. The until now, it has never been available in digital format, and I've got to give credit to Steve Fisher, the other guitar player for Floodgate, and you know, we did a lot back in the day. We came really close to doing bigger and better things, and it just kind of fell out from underneath us, and we were never happy with the way it ended. And in the process, it just, aside from a remaster, re-release by Metal Mind Records out of Poland, and that was just 2,000 units, really, it just kind of faded away, and we've never been too happy about that. So he really worked hard to push getting in touch with Monty Connor at Nuclear Blast, because Monty was our A&R guy when he was senior vice president at Roadrunner. And he put him in connection with a representative there, and Steve pushed really, really hard to have them make this thing available. It's available now on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Music, I believe. So for anyone that was never able to obtain a hard copy of it, we don't have that going yet. Hopefully that's something we can address in the future. But you can actually hear these songs now. You can download them one by one or just get the whole album. It's been hailed by many as kind of like a front runner to what eventually became stoner rock, I guess. I don't know. We weren't trying to pioneer anything necessarily. We just writing songs that felt right at the time. It was it started out with my brother and I writing songs together on guitar and bass, and we got Steve in the picture, and then we got Neil in the picture, and we just kind of went out doing something completely different from what really any of us had done before that. My brother was in a punk rock band called Acid Bath before the Acid Bath that everybody knew from Louisiana. And Steve was in a band called Basil's Favorite Hat, which is more like alternative sound stuff. And I don't know that Neil had ever been in a live band, but he had been like a thrash metal drummer before that. So we all had really been known for something more than, much more different than what Floodgate was, which was, you know, bluesy inspired heavy rock.
Yeah.
So to have that available to people now on an album that some people consider a timeless classic is it's an honor to me to be able to present it to people again and to have as many people consider that thing a classic as they do. That's much appreciated.
And it is a classic, and I do recommend people to go and check out on all mediums, like you say, Google Play, Spotify, it's there. Spotify. Hey, oh. and then obviously, while we're here, More in the Southern Skies is available on all mediums as well. But I don't really want to promote those mediums. I want to promote going out and buying a physical hard copy, guys and girls. It's the best way to have it. It's the best way to listen to it. But if you still want to hear more from More in the Southern Skies, go and just give yourself a little bit of a hint of it on Spotify and get your ass out and buy the album. Do it, because Dynamo said so.
Thank you.
And Kyle, my friend, we're gonna play out on this last track, and it's gonna be the title track off your first Exhorder album. I guess I'll let you introduce the song and what it means to you, Slaughter in the Vatican.
Yeah, this would be the song that pissed off my father and broke my mother's heart.
And what better way to segue into this? Through Him, Dynamo, over and out.
Through Him, with Him, in Him, in the unity of the Holy Spirit, all glory and honor is yours, Almighty Father.